Lori Houston's News for the Heart is dedicated to helping you give a voice to your own soul. Our hearts have the power to free us from pain and the struggles that keep us from awakening to our true essence. Join Lori now as we delve into our heart and soul to find the path that will open us to the possibilities and lead us to the life we love to live.
Hey, good afternoon. This is News for the Heart. And today, you know, I've done some amazing interviews, and I, you know, over the, it's almost been 10 years or very close that I've been doing interviews, and I've had some pretty awesome guests, and for some reason, we have lost touch, Peggy. So my guest today is Peggy McCall, and she is, well, she's a great author. Her newest book that we're gonna do a review on and talk about and chat about is called The Last Diet Book Ever. And you did say it was a humorous book, and I have to say, it surprised me just a bit, but it's great. And so let's talk about that. But welcome to the show, Peggy. I mean, you've done some great books, and you know you're an inspiration to so many people, and you're Canadian, which I adore. And
that's awesome. Well, it's such a pleasure to be with you again. It has been a while, actually, since we were back together. But I'm really delighted. This book, The Last Diet Book Ever, was something that was an idea that was firmly planted in the seat of my mind a few years ago, actually, I think about 2 years ago. And the idea came to me when I was sitting in the back of a room. I was getting ready to go on stage. And the host of the event was on stage, and he was talking about how he had lost weight. And he had mentioned that he just really followed a very simple guideline, and that was he ate less and he exercised a little more. And then, bammo, it just hit me. I mean, that is the secret to, you know, losing weight or to get in shape. It's simple, because I'm always distilling things down to simplicity. When I wrote my first book called On Being the Creator of Your Destiny, it was really helping people understand at the most simplistic level how we are creative, how we're destructive, and to pay attention to which side of that equation you're on. And everything I do, everything I teach when I work with my clients, quite often I'm helping them, you know, see the obvious in things. And so when I was in the back of the room and I was getting ready to be introduced on stage, that idea, bam, hit me. I went to GoDaddy.com. I registered the last diet book ever.com. And I thought, I'm going to do this book and it's going to include the content that it has. And that was it. That's where the whole idea came from. But I actually didn't move on it until about a month and a half ago.
Oh, okay. Well, you know, again, I love the idea. Now, we all know that there are some people, like, for myself, I had to take a part-time job that actually made me very, very sick. And I got frozen shoulders and I got heavy metal poisoning. And, wow. You know, I don't know if you've ever had frozen shoulders.
I have had frozen shoulder, one of them.
Yeah, well, I got both of them. And
oh, my word.
It really set me back for several years, actually. I was determined when I got it, oh, no problem, I'll get rid of it quickly, and I did all the right things that I should have done. And, you know, sometimes the universe is just trying to get you to hear something that you're not hearing. And, you know, sometimes it's just about taking rest and nurturing you. But,
right.
You know, during that time, and even, you know, even as I come out of it, my energy level hasn't been very high. And, you know, sometimes there's still pain. And so for a lot of women or men, you know, who do have excess weight that they're not, you know, even usually acclimatized to, you know, as you get older, causes aches and pains. So sometimes the exercise part isn't enough, or it is, it's a problem. The other part of it is, you know, sometimes it has to do with finding that motivation, that one, you know, sometimes you're just, your head knows, your ego knows, you go into self shame and guilt and all the different things that happen. But until you're actually motivated, until you come from that being place, change doesn't happen.
Yes. Well, you've got to be motivated. Absolutely. It's the starting point to everything. Think and Grow Rich by Napoleon Hill talks about the burning desire. You've got to have the desire. You know, when I got married to my husband, Denny, and of course, Denny being in my life and my son was a teenager and I started cooking differently, I started to pack on a few pounds and I never had any weight issues, you know, pretty much my entire life. And, you know, I believe I had the same metabolism as my father. My father was always tall and skinny and you know, he just never seemed to gain weight and never watched what he ate. And I was pretty much the same. But when I got to my 40s, and as I wrote in the preface of the last diet book ever, my sister-in-law, Alice, who's a little bit older than I, she said to me, you know, when you hit your 40s, you know, your weight's going to hell in a handbasket. It's like, well, that sounds promising. And then instantly in my mind, I'm thinking, well, I'm just dismissing that. I'm just dismissing that. And I'm very much of the mindset that we, you know, we create our reality. And to some degree, not everything. We don't have control over everything in this universe. But I did find that I started to, you know, put on weight and then I thought, you know, I was changing my size and my clothes, you know, I was throwing away the size 4 and I was buying size 6. And then I got to a point where I was throwing away the size 6 and I'm buying size 8, or, you know, winter would pass and I put my clothes on in the spring. It's like, whoa, you know what? The winter must have shrunk my clothes in my closet because they're all tight, right? And only to realize that, hey, wait a minute. So I would set like objectives for myself. I'm going to lose the weight by a certain date. Like I'm doing a speaking engagement in front of a large crowd, or I'm going on national TV, or something was coming up. And I noticed that when people were on programs to lose weight, it was quite often because they had something coming up, a date, or they were just tired. They were just tired of being overweight. And they just said, enough is enough. You know, I'm going to do something about it. And then got on with the work. But at the end of the day, it starts with some kind of a motivation, whether it's right or wrong. It's just a motivation for that person, and they're going to do something about it once and for all. I know for me, what really drove me once I had started packing on a few pounds to lose it again is I was invited to a wedding in Jamaica. So it was one of those, you know, destination weddings where, you know, you're on a beach and you're pretty well in flimsy little clothes, and I thought, I don't want to be looking like a beached whale while I'm there, so I'm gonna do something to get myself back in shape. So that was a motivator.
It's funny, my 40s were probably my best.
Yeah,
yeah, they were. Just
well, they were
near
pretty
the
good
end
until the later part of the 40s. I yeah. found that's when yeah. that's when the hell in a handbasket experience yeah. came along.
Yeah, but, that's when I got sick.
Maybe. But, you know, like, I know you're into creative stuff as well, creative work as well. And you know, I teach people how to achieve their dreams. And we've really got to pay attention to what we're thinking about and what we're saying. Our behaviors are quite often a response to what do we believe. It's a response to our own identity. How do we really feel about ourselves? Even when you talk about shame and things like that, you know, part of the reason why people pack on weight in the first place is because there's something about themselves. They may not be loving themselves and they're not treating themselves in a very loving way. And as a result of that, they'll do things that are not that they're really conscious. It's almost like an unconscious component. They're doing it without even realizing that they're doing it, but they're sabotaging their own health and they're affecting their own weight because they're not really loving themselves and taking care of themselves.
Absolutely. Now that I think that is, well, I think we all know that that's a huge problem in our society. I think that's probably one of the bigger problems in our society is that we don't know how to love ourselves. And, you know, taking care of ourselves and honoring the vessel that we have, you know,
yeah.
we get stuck, we get, you know, we get pulled back and, you know, all these things can happen.
True.
But, you know, I went away last year and I thought that was going to be the year that I lost weight, but I seriously, it's not been until this new year that came in that just some things just switch. I'm just like, okay, not it's not only that I'm ready, it's just that there was some motivational aspect that I just, you know, was like, yeah, now I can be it, now I can know it from, you know, that health perspective. And even though I've been saying it for the last couple years, you know, it was just something about this year that went, yeah, I'm ready. And you know, I don't know. Sometimes we just, you know, people ask why they're not. And it's like, well, you know, sometimes you're just not ready. And no matter what you do to those people, they're not going to change until they're ready to make a change.
Right. Yeah, it's true. You've got to be ready to make the change. But, you know, I will tell people that we are habitual creatures, and that's the good news and it's the bad news. And the bad news is, because we're habitual creatures, we will tend to do the same things over and over again. So if you expect different results, you got to create some new habits. Now, the good news of that is, once we create new habits, you'll get into the new habits, and hopefully you'll stay in those new habits. And eating is part of a habit. Exercising is a part of a habit. I have a friend, and she's an instructor. She teaches all kinds of different programs, and there's a period of time that she owned her own gymnasiums, you know, where she had members, and she was completely, utterly addicted to exercising. And I said to her, how did you get addicted to it? And she said, well, she started, you know, started exercising, and in the beginning, you know, it wasn't something that she was accustomed to doing. It was a breaking of a pattern of behavior. But she started to exercise on a regular basis, and at first she had to really, really tap into her discipline and be persistent and just go and go and go. And in the beginning, it didn't feel good to go. As a matter of fact, it felt awful. I mean, she was feeling nauseous, and she went through that whole experience until she got to a point where, you know, it's almost like things changed, and she started feeling better when she exercised. And then she noticed she would feel even better and better and better. And then she fell in love with that feel-good feeling of just feeling good every time she went to exercise. And that's why you see people, like, I just got back from Los Angeles, and I was there at Bob Proctor's event called the Classic Seminar. And I had offered Bob, I said, Bob, I want to speak at your event. And he's like, okay, well, you've been around my material for 36 years. I've studied his material extensively for 36 years. I think I'm one of the only people in the room that has been going to his stuff that long. And he said, sure, I'd love for you to, you know, come and present. So, you know, I went to that event. I bought a table. I bought my own VIP table and invited some clients and went to the event. And I spoke both days, Saturday and Sunday. And I come back from that, and I'm feeling like on a high. Right now, I live this stuff. You know, I live the whole professional and personal development. I teach it as well. I write about it. I'm constantly, you know, staying in it. And I am addicted to it. I'm addicted to it because it's become a habitual way of thinking, and it's become a habitual way of behavior. So when I wake up every morning, I don't do anything except grab my gratitude journal and I start looking through my vision book, and I have a vision board as well, and I do my affirmations, and I've got these habitual things that I'm doing every day. And so, but I wasn't always doing them. You know, I would do some of these things a little bit, you know, way back when I started, but now it's like every single day. So we can get addicted to really good stuff, you know, things that can cause us to just feel really, really good about ourselves and about the results, and get into a habit where I couldn't imagine a day without doing my work in personal development. I could not imagine a day where I wasn't writing in my gratitude journal. I've done it for decades, and it is absolutely a way of being for me. So we can create new ways of being that's going to produce much better results by just creating some new disciplines, by getting into the habit of following through every single day and sticking with it.
Yeah, I mean, that's really the only thing we can do. I just wonder sometimes when it's just a mental exercise versus, you know, that being feeling.
Oh,
it's
not a mental exercise. Mental exactly. Exercise is part of it, but it's not the magic.
Right.
You know, the magic is when we're feeling it. It's our emotions are tapping into the vibrational energy of the universe. And that's how we attract. We attract based on how we feel, not what we're saying, not necessarily what we're doing. It's how we're feeling. That's what's most important.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. All right. So let's dive into some of these chapters.
Yeah. How exciting is that, isn't it?
Yeah. Okay. Chapter one. I do love this. Always wear black when you exercise, like you're going to a funeral for your fat.
Oh my God, I had so much fun writing this book. I really did. I mean, you should have been here, Lori, when I was writing. And what's funny is, just to tell you how this whole thing came to be, I mentioned, you know, 2 years ago, I was at this seminar, and that's where the idea came from. So I was at a funeral back in February. And one of my clients actually flew up for the funeral as well. It was a friend of mine, a close friend of the family. Of course, my client has become like a close friend of the family as well. And my husband and I, my client, we came back from the funeral, and something, I don't know what it was, you know, whether it was, you know, somebody's life has passed and it's like, I got to get this done. And, you know, whether it was one of those experiences or not, but I just felt inspired to create this. And in my mind, I had been thinking, I saw the book originally as being mostly blank, like a whole bunch of pages, like 120 pages, mostly blank. And then somewhere in the middle would be the big message, you know, eat less, exercise more. So somewhere in the middle. And then it occurred to me, it just like popped, bam, right in my mind. You know what? I'm going to have the words repeated, because repetition, you know, it's like faith, repetition, and expectancy. And that one of the people that I've studied through the whole process of the work that I've been doing for the 36 years that I've been at it is somebody by the name of Dr. Joseph Murphy. And Dr. Joseph Murphy says that it's with faith, expectancy, and repetition that we manifest. And so faith is knowing that you're going to do it or get there. And of course, repetition is reaffirming that you're going to accomplish something. And then expectancy is expecting that it's just done, like feeling as if it's already there. So understanding and knowing the importance of repetition, I thought, I'm just going to repeat these words, eat less, exercise more, and have it throughout the book. But then I thought, well, I want to make it fun, because the cover said 13 simple tips to absolute weight loss. And I thought, well, I've got to come up with 13 really funny chapter titles. And so that's where these chapter titles came from. I just started thinking, and I have a sort of a funny sense of humor. when I speak, I'm quite often, you know, sharing a joke. Like every time I speak for Bob Proctor, before I go to the event, I'll go there with some kind of a story. And basically what I do is I take a joke that I've heard, and of course it has to be clean and non-offensive, and I just make it about Bob. You know, I'll find a way to make some kind of a funny story about Bob. So my sense of humor definitely came through. You know, I always wear black when you exercise, like you're going to a funeral for your fat, and then do this, which is eat less, exercise more. And then, you know, chapter two, diddly squats are not an effective form of exercise, but almost any other form of exercise will do when you follow this proven formula. Because it's like, you know, what are you doing? Diddly squat. You know, you've heard that expression. Maybe not everybody's going to know that expression. But especially if English isn't their first language, but doing diddly squat is definitely not a good form. But squats are a form of exercise.
Very.
Right?
Very challenging form of exercise for
a
lot of people.
Very challenging form of exercise. So that's really where you know, these ideas came from. There's one chapter here, chapter 11, it says, I sincerely hope you never think of yourself as fat and ugly. But anyone who does, here's the best method I know of to overcome that attitude and form a new positive self-image. I actually originally had that chapter. It said, if you think of yourself as fat and ugly, go to the gym and just be ugly. That's what, that's what I had there. But I sent it to a friend of mine to review my chapter titles just to get his feedback. And he changed that one. He said, oh, I don't think you should say that. But I thought it was funny. You know, think yourself as fat and ugly, just go to the gym and be ugly. I thought it was funny. He didn't think so. So I had to change that one. I think I should do the next edition with their original thought in there. I think it's kind of funny. So that's where, like, I remember, you know, one time a friend of mine who just loves her red wine. She's like a freak for red wine, but yet she's not really an exerciser. And I remember her saying that to me one time, that, you know, drinking red wine, I'm using my muscles, my arm muscles, maybe I'll build some good muscles. So that's where the idea for chapter six came from. Doing reps with a full glass of wine doesn't count as strength training.
Right? You know, there's some videos, and I think they're for moms,
Okay.
Because my niece keeps putting them up. They are so funny. But there is this one, and she, you know, she's all about working out with her friends, and literally they have wine bottles, and they're doing they're doing this routine with the wine bottles and with the glasses, and, you know, doing a push up and then taking a drink. I mean, it's hilarious.
That's funny. That is so funny. You know, we laugh at that kind of stuff, but, you know, laughter is a great form of exercise. You're burning a lot of calories by laughing. It really is a good one. Plus, you know, as you know, it releases endorphins in your body. It causes you to feel good. Like, there was a book written years ago by Norman Cousins called The Anatomy of an Illness. And he was told, he had been diagnosed with an incurable disease. Anybody can look this up online, Norman Cousins, Anatomy of an Illness. And he had been told he had an incurable disease, or that he was going to die. You know, whatever he had was supposed to be fatal. And he thought, I'm not accepting that prognosis. So he decided that he would laugh himself to health. And that's what he did. He just started watching old movies or videos, or it might have been, I'm trying to think, I'm certain we didn't have DVDs back then. Right. It might have been VHS videos or something. Somehow he got a hold of all kinds of these recordings of these funny, funny shows, and he just laughed himself back to health. And so, you know, we may be, like, even think about people who are in good spirits. You know, like if someone picks up the last diet book ever, I mean, there's some people that are just grumpy, right? They're just miserable. And they'll pick this up and go, like, are you kidding me? And, like, they might complain or whatever. It's like they probably complain about other stuff too. I remember one time hearing a professional speaker say, no matter what, no matter where you are, people will complain. You could give somebody $1 million and they'd probably complain that they'd have to find some way to invest it, or they have to pay some tax on it or whatever. It's like there are people in like that in the world. And when I launched this book, I mean, the comments were amazing. You know, people coming back going, this is brilliant. You know, people saying, I'm throwing away my diet. I'm just going to do what you suggest in the book. I've had Bob Proctor. I took it to his house actually in Toronto, and I had a meeting with him, and I showed it to him, and he just laughed. He said, this is absolutely amazing and true. Yeah. It's true. But there was one person who was really pissed off, you know, and she was angry, right? Like really, really angry. And I'm thinking to myself, wow, get a hold of yourself, honey. You know, like, it's okay. You know, life's not meant to be that difficult. But there are people that are going to be angry in this world. And it's like Wayne Dyer used to say, you squeeze an orange, orange juice is going to come out. And you squeeze somebody and anger comes out. It's because it was in there.
Right.
Right. So, you know, I don't think it's going to please everybody. That's why I'm very open to tell people what's inside. Right. And as much as it doesn't take long to read the book, like I've been getting really funny texts and emails from people that have been buying this book saying, I'm on chapter 5, you know, I'm totally, you know, like, you know, stuff like that. Like, I can't put it down, you know, or I spent last night reading your book. Okay, how long did that take? Right. Or I'm blocked off the whole weekend to dive into your book, and then I'll have to tell them, hey, listen, honey, I just want you to know it's not going to take y'all a weekend. It'll probably take about 10 minutes. So,
but, well, you know, we take life so seriously. And unfortunately, you know, when it comes to our health, I mean, especially weight related, I mean, it can really affect people's health. It's so hard for some people, you know, some people struggle with it all their lives. And, you know, we have a choice.
Yeah,
we can see things.
Good chapter on chapter 5. Did you have that one?
Yeah. But choice. I mean, we have a choice. We can either see life from that place of I'm a victim and everybody betrays me. In fact, even my body betrays me. Or you can come from a place of love and say, you know what? Everything has a reason. And stop making this so, like, you're not a victim here. You just need to make some changes, and you need to see it from a different perspective. Stop making it, I don't know, your identity. Stop making it something so painful, and just you know, make small changes. Stop trying to make it all like, you know, there are so many things that are unhealthy for us that we do, like sugar and wheats. And, you know, we have these issues that are plaguing this world, and, you know, the GMO things. And like, I'm not supposed to have wheat. I'm not gluten intolerant. And I found that if I have, like, there's Ace Bread in Toronto, which I think is pretty much a standard in Canada, but it's now GMO, or it's always been non-GMO. They just have finally gotten their recognition for it. Okay. But, you know, it makes a huge difference. If we become conscious of the things that are actually the problem, I mean, sugar is a huge problem. Like, it's huge. It's epidemic. It is.
Yeah, it's a deadly poison.
Right.
And if people thought about it, it's like, if you knew that was going to hurt your body, would you put it in your physical body? You know, the other day I found some texts that my mom and I were sending to each other. She used to be on MSN Messenger when she was alive. She passed away in 2008. And I was searching for something the other day on my computer, and I found a dialogue that her and I were having. I'm so happy I saved them. It was so much fun to save them. And there was someone that we knew, I won't say who it is just in case she listens to your show. There was someone that we knew that was pregnant. And it was someone that we knew very well. And I asked my mom in the dialogue, how is she doing? She says, oh, she seems to be okay. And I said to my mom, I said, did she quit smoking? And she said, no, she hasn't yet. And it's like, it makes me crazy. And she's pregnant. It's like giving a cigarette to a baby. Like, do you know what you're doing to your baby? Like, why would you even do that to your baby? And so, you know, we start this little dialogue where we're talking about this woman, young woman who was pregnant, and she was smoking cigarettes. And I said, well, did she at least stop drinking pop? Because she was drinking pop all the time and addicted to pop. And she said, no, she's still doing that. It's like, oh my goodness. Like, if she had any idea what that does to not only herself, but her baby. Like, if you love your child, would you do that? Would you give a baby a Coke or, you know, I should maybe not say cola. How about if I say cola? Anyways, you know, I think what was happening for this particular young woman is that she didn't love herself. You know, when you talked about identity a minute ago, I think that's really significant. And this young woman simply wasn't loving herself. Her identity was she didn't see herself as a healthy, vibrant, happy person. That's not how she saw herself. And as a result, you know, she was very unhappy and insecure and unhealthy. And of course, all of the things that she was doing were just reflective of how she really felt about herself. And I found out, and as I said, my mom died in 2008, so that was, what, 8 years ago now, and so this person has had her child all these years, I think maybe about 8 years now, and I understand that, you know, she's a young woman, she had to have all of her teeth removed because they were rotten. Yeah, that's kind of like sad, you know, it's sad that she just hasn't taken care of herself, but it's part of what she believed. Like, if you are somebody who you really love yourself or are willing to love yourself, and you create the identity of being someone who is conscientious, not just about other things or the planet or whatever, but about yourself and how you're feeding this vessel. This is the body that's going to get us, you know, get us to the end of our time. And it's our vehicle. So how do we treat it? You want your car to keep working for you. You want your car to function and operate for you. You're going to treat it properly. You know, when the indicator comes on to say you need to change your oil, you're going to change your oil. If the indicator comes on to say you need to put some gasoline in it, you're going to put gasoline in it. You're not going to put garbage in it, right? You're not going to start stuffing garbage down the gas tank. And we've got to really respect our bodies that way as well. It's like everything we put in our mouths is either strengthening us or it's hurting us. Everything. I remember one time seeing Wayne Dyer. I don't know why Wayne keeps coming up, but he does. Anyways, I remember he was a client of mine as well. I loved working with Wayne. Wayne was on stage at an event and he held up a banana And he held up a chocolate bar. And he said, which one of these is going to strengthen you? And which one of these is going to weaken you? Well, it's pretty obvious, right? The banana is going to strengthen you. You know, it's a natural thing that came from the earth. And not that all natural things that come from the earth are going to strengthen you, because there's some things that don't, like drugs, right? And what's going to weaken you, and of course the chocolate bar is full of sugar and it's going to weaken you. And it was such a simple demonstration from stage, and yet so powerful.
Yeah.
Really bringing a message. And you talked earlier about choice. We're making a choice every time we, you know, go to the refrigerator or go in the cupboard or go in a store or go in a restaurant. We are making a choice of how we feel about ourselves.
Yeah. Yeah. And I mean, sugar, see, the problem with sugar, I mean, there's so many problems with sugar, but I mean, in its natural state, it's probably, I mean, it's still a drug.
Right.
And it's still a problem.
Because we become addicted to it, right?
The worst is, though, is that they've done so many things to sugar. And, you know, and those are far more worse on our body. I mean, and then, sure, you know, we come out with all these diet products and,
exactly,
even more, right?
Poisons.
It's, you know, we just need to be more aware. Like if you could give up sugar, and, you know, once you're addicted to it, it is hard to give up. I mean, here's interesting. I can't remember the author, but he, you know, because he was writing a diet book, but he never actually had a weight problem. So he actually gained weight.
Okay.
And then tried to, you know, get back to his original state. And he said, you know, it was so hard because he'd gotten addicted to sugar, and to make that conscious choice to let go of that sugar. He said it was hard, and it really is. Like, but if you love yourself and you're motivated and you're ready to make the changes and you realize just how detrimental certain things are to your health, then you know, because sugar is killing us. Like it probably in most cases could be, you know, 70-80% of the problem with people that have weight issues, because it affects our insulin levels. It affects so much of our body that we're,
true,
it's, you know, it's creating diabetes type 2 with us because it's such a problem. Like we're not getting it.
Well, one of my friends recently, he studies a lot of stuff about health. And he said, you know, a lot of people think carbs make you fat. He says, carbs don't make you fat. Sugar makes you fat.
Which carbs turn into if they're simple carbs. But yeah, exactly.
Right. Well, I remember one time hearing, it was actually one of my author clients, talk about, you know, stuff that she was including in her book. And she was talking about the three white poisons. And she wasn't the only one that had talked about this. And they are salt, sugar, and white flour.
Yeah.
How poisonous they are. But you mentioned, you know, the things that people use to create sweet tastes, like saccharin and other things like that. I mean, there's more than just white poisons. There are three white poisons. There's plenty of them. But we need to really be aware. Like years ago, I wrote a book, and I've been very, very seriously thinking about re-releasing this book. And the book is called Stop Digging Your Grave with Your Mouth.
Mm.
And the original idea for that book came a number of years ago when I was visiting my mom, and my mom would say things like she was sick and tired, or something was killing her. And it was just constant words or language that would come out of her mouth. And she was often sick and tired. And I remember thinking, and she ultimately ended up dying of cancer, lung cancer. My brother died of cancer. My father had cancer. And so the book, you're digging your grave with your mouth, originally started from the whole concept of energy of words and the words we say. And you'll hear it. Just notice people say, oh, like I'm dying to go here, right? You're dying. You're dying to go there? Well, if you're dying, then you're not going to really enjoy it. So just really paying attention. Like we're creative beings. We're consciously creating and unconsciously creating all the time. And so that was the original idea, is I want to do a book and help people understand the power and the energy of words. And then I thought, well, I'd like to do a section on if we're digging our grave with our mouths, you know, what are we putting in our mouth? Like drugs, prescription drugs, nicotine, you know, what do you got, cigarettes. I was never a smoker, but both my parents smoked, and both of them had heart attacks. My father had a stroke. Ultimately, that's what killed him. My brother died of cancer. He died of esophagus cancer, which apparently the number one contributor to that is alcohol, and he was a big drinker. And earlier I mentioned this woman who was, you know, drinking pop when she was pregnant and smoking cigarettes and had to have her teeth removed because she destroyed them. Sugar destroyed them, actually. And she's very slim, but yet she's on the borderline of diabetes. Her doctor's telling her if she doesn't change the way she's eating, she's going to be a type 2 diabetic. Right. And you know, what happens when you get diabetes? You know, like you start losing body parts, you know, it's like, oh my goodness, it's crazy. So I, you know, I've had that idea for many, many years. I actually originally wrote an ebook and back in probably a dozen years ago now, but I've been very seriously about bringing that book up. I am not a health expert. I am not an expert in dieting whatsoever, but I understand just enough to know we should be paying attention to what we're putting in our physical bodies. And of course, we should also be paying attention to what we're saying as well, because that's impacting what's showing up in our life. Yeah. Or not showing up in our life.
Exactly. All right, let's go to chapter 7, because I kind of like that one.
Chapter 7. Get up early and start exercising before your brain figures out what you're up to. That's so cute, isn't it? You know, it really speaks to the whole idea of, you know, sometimes we think too much. You know, we start thinking about, oh, I got to do that, right? And then we just think ourselves right out of doing it. And so as much as it's funny, it's like get into the habit of doing this first thing in the morning and it's done. But if you plan on exercising at the end of the day or in the evening, you're very likely not going to do it unless you are somebody who's very disciplined. So that's why you know, it's fun doing this interview with me, with you, because as much as it was, you know, really fun and playful, there's so much truth to these Absolutely. Chapter titles.
I have to do it in the morning because that's, I mean, I don't get up early, but it's the first thing I do.
Excellent.
Just because it's the thing that makes me, you know, it gives me energy and it makes my day. I mean, it, you know, except when we have, you know, all the snow, but yeah, I mean, I did go out in the winter, mind you, this winter has been, you know, so great, but you know, it is one of those things. I mean, I see people, you know, running in the middle of the summer at, in the middle of the day where it's just like, I'm in the water going, what are you people doing? Like, I think, you know, okay, there's dedication, but then there's just stupidity.
I hear you.
Like, I think, you know, when you look at addictions, I think there are people that are addicted to exercise because it does release the endorphins and it does make you feel better. And you, you know, you can get to that place, but I think there are some people that overdo it. And those people are just, you know, just getting ready for a heart attack because they're, it's kind of crazy that way too. But you know, if you're sensible, like most people should be sensible, if you should be fine. But I mean, right. I see these people and I think it's like 100 degrees outside. What are you doing? Like, do you really think that that is actually good for your body?
I think it's so important to have fun.
Yeah.
Right? You've got to have fun with it. When you incorporate the fun as part of a regular regimen, like, Zumba dancing as an example, that's really taken off, and it's a lot of fun, you know, to like, think about when you've been dancing, like it's hard to dance to great music and have a frown on your face.
Good point.
You're just going to have a lot of fun. Like I tend to like to do things that are fun. Like I really recognize the value of our time. You know, I like to do things where I might go for a ride on the bike or go for a, you know, walk in the woods, you know, with my husband or my grandson. I love playing with my grandson. He's 4 years old and he really keeps me active. You know, he wants to play games. Come on, grandma, let's go play, you know, play these different games. And it can be a form of exercise. I mean, inevitably after I've had him here at our home for a weekend, I'll get on the scale on a Monday morning, and I've dropped a couple pounds because I've been so active with him. And it's good. I think everybody should just get themselves a grandson and they'll lose weight.
Now, I really like chapter 9, although, you know, the compelling part is, you know, difficult.
Yeah. You think exercise is a dirty word and feel compelled to wash out your mouth out with chocolate, then here's the way best way to overcome that destructive mindset. Although washing your mouth out with chocolate doesn't sound like a horrible idea. I know some people think that dark chocolate is actually good for you. I don't like dark chocolate, so.
I don't either, but I do get that it, because it has less sugar, right? It has the least amount of sugar. The higher the chocolate, the higher the percentage of dark chocolate is in it, the less sugar it has. So that's why. I agree. I mean, there are some very good brands that are out there, but it doesn't quite have the same flavor. But I do it, you know, if I need it, if it's a, you know, if I'm really, really in that place. But I haven't been. I actually have been quite good at getting rid of sugar in my diet. So, yeah, I'm on that.
Excellent. Excellent. I still eat sugar. Yeah. I don't think as much as I have in the past. I'll just think about Wayne's question: is this gonna strengthen you or is this gonna weaken you? And and I'll make a decision that way. But sometimes, you know, I'll indulge.
Sure, but when your weight isn't an issue and when you're not addicted, that's not a problem. But if you are addicted, you know, you have to cut it out for a while.
True.
Right? If it's one of your addictions, you have to cut it out because your body needs to heal. See, I think one of the big problems with our digestion, and I really do like the heading of chapter 8, but you know, I think one of the big issues is that we have a lot of digestion problems and we're not digesting our food. So, you know, depending on what it is that you're wanting to add in, but you know, I just like, but eating a skinny person won't solve your weight problem.
That's just kind of crazy. It's the crazy girl that I am. Yes, it's true. You really are what you eat, but eating a skinny person won't solve your weight problem. I don't know where this stuff comes from, but.
Yeah, you kind of got a twisted sense of humor.
I think so.
I love it.
I think so. You know, my dad was a very, very funny man. And I loved his sense of humor. He was so playful. And my brother, Gary, that I mentioned, who passed away at the very young age of 49, him and I were very close. And he was the funniest person I've ever met in my life by far. And whenever I was with him, my cheeks would hurt from laughing so hard. And I remember one time we were, you know, sitting around, the family was sitting around, and Gary, his name was Gary, was being really, really funny, and we're all laughing so hard. And my mom, as I mentioned, was a smoker. So she was smoking, and she would end up laughing so hard she'd be coughing and choking. And she would say to me, like, make him stop, make him stop. And it's like, I can't. I mean, he was nonstop. And I remember saying to Gary one time, you know, you should really look at doing comedy, like stand-up comedy. You're just screaming funny, hilariously funny. And it was all spontaneous. It was just, bam, it would come to him. And he said, you know, I find that I don't think I would do well at that. And he didn't think he would do well at it because he felt that it had to be sort of performed. It had to be something that was practiced and performed. That's not the way he was funny. He was funny spontaneously. And if he had to actually create some kind of a show and deliver it, he didn't feel that he'd have that spontaneity to just go with it. But you watch, you know, watch like even late night talk show hosts. Not that I'm up late very often, but we're going to go see Jimmy Kimmel soon. And so my husband and I have been, you know, taping some of his shows and watching it. And you'll just see some of these guys. They're funny. They're spontaneously funny. Yeah. Melissa McCarthy, who's a very funny actress. Like she's spontaneously funny. I saw something, there was a little segment online of Melissa McCarthy and Jimmy Fallon, who did a lip sync contest. I don't know if you've seen it, Lori, or not, but you should look it up and check it out. It was so hilarious. I think I saw it on Facebook. And you just watch their spontaneity. And I think it's really, really important to keep that sense of humor, whether you're just open to other people being funny or whether you're open to being funny yourself. And I have found that humor solves so many things. It'll just, as you know, Norman Cousins wrote about in Anatomy of an Illness, it causes you to feel good. And when you're feeling good, you attract good. That's it. Bam. End of day. You feel good, you attract good. You feel good, you attract good. Feeling good is something that everybody should be striving for every single day.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And humor is one of the best ways to, you know, to get yourself out of that place. Like, you know, when we get ourselves stuck and in, you know, some of our dark days, you know, all we have to do is try and find something. That's what I will always do. Always, always, always. And then I'll find something that makes my heart sing.
Excellent.
You know, but it's just those little bits. Like you have to. And this book, I mean, the concept around this book, the fact that, you know, you want to lighten this all up. I mean, I love that you dedicated it to Oprah. But I mean...
Oh my God, I got to tell you, speaking of that, this makes me laugh. I had this woman, she's a producer of a pretty big show in the US. I won't say which one it is. But anyway, she saw, I guess, when I had posted on Facebook about the last diet book ever. And she's like, oh, Peggy, like, and I've been on that show before. And she says, like, I'd really love to have you on our show as a guest. And it's a big show. So she says, can you send me a copy of the book? I said, sure. You know, so I emailed her a copy of the book. And then she sends me a message saying, I see that you've dedicated to Oprah. And she said, do you know Oprah? And I'm thinking, oh, brother, like, do I know Oprah? Yeah, we're like best friends. I'm like, what does it matter, right, whether I know Oprah or not? And so, and now the reason why I dedicated Oprah is because, as you know, with my sense of humor, I thought that'd be funny, right? Dedicated Oprah. Like, you watch her commercials right now that are going on, and it's like the year of your best body. That's what she's calling it. This is the year of your best body. So it's like, no, I don't know Oprah, but, you know, there's, if you really understand the book, which takes about one page to figure out, which is on page 5, you'll get it, right? You'll get it. And so I never heard from her again, but anyways, it just made me laugh. Like, do you know Oprah? Like, oh my God, they're like, somebody can't dedicate a book to somebody else because they don't know them. Like, that's ridiculous. Anyways, it's just, boggle my mind. Now I know for sure Oprah Winfrey has a good sense of humor. So if this book ultimately ends up getting to her, then fabulous. Then I think that's great. Speaking of that, I'll tell you a quick little story that I think you will appreciate since you're totally into creating our experiences. I was, at Bob Proctor's house, as I mentioned a little while ago, before I'd finished the book, or maybe the book was out, and I showed it to him, right? And he thought it was screaming hilarious. And he has a great sense of humor. Bob Proctor has a phenomenal sense of humor. So he loved the book idea. And he said, you know, not only is it funny, it's true. Like the whole concept of the book is true. Like, you just repeat, right? And so he was telling me that he was going down to a meeting at Success Magazine. He was flying down in a private jet on that Sunday, and he was going to Success Magazine, and he was going to have a meeting with them. And he had a meeting with the editor, and I thought it was Darren Hardy. I didn't realize that it was no longer Darren Hardy. And it was this new guy. Well, I don't know how new, but someone that was now the editor of the magazine and a pretty cool guy. And so Bob says, I'm going down to meet with this guy. And I think it was John Addison, maybe is his name. And so, you know, after I got back home from Bob's place, I went online and I was just looking up, you know, Success Magazine, because I used to subscribe to that magazine years ago. And I think now you can get a subscription electronically. And so I was just, you know, looking at their site and reading some of the articles there. And there was an article in there about Jimmy Kimmel.
Okay.
And the article was about Jimmy Kimmel and weight. He had a weight issue. And he created this very simplistic methodology of eliminating weight. And I forget what it was. It was something really simple. I'm thinking to myself, oh, okay, so Jimmy Kimmel really gets this idea of having weight challenges. I mean, he's not a big guy. He's a slim guy. But there was a period of time where he wanted to release some weight, and he ended up doing it. And he created a very simple system for doing it. And I thought, I want to get my book to Jimmy Kimmel. I think it'd be a great place for the last diet book ever. And about a week later, I was at a gala event in California, in Los Angeles, and they had an auction. And the auction was designed to raise money for this charity. And so the auction included, they had a number of different items, but one of the auction items was VIP tickets to Jimmy Kimmel Live. And I thought, wow, I'm going to get that. And I just, in my mind, I just said, okay, I'm going to go up to $5,000. That's what I'm willing to pay for them, $5,000. It was going to a good cause. And I started bidding. And somebody on the other side, there were 600 people in the room. Somebody on the other side of the room was bidding against me. So, you know, the numbers kept going up. We got to 5,000. I just stopped bidding. And so the other person, well, didn't really win it, but they, you know, they got the right to buy the tickets for like $5,200 or something like that. So then I guess the person that donated the tickets were in the room, and they said, listen, if that other woman across the way is willing to pay $5,000, we'll also, you know, let her buy the Jimmy Kimmel tickets for $5,000. So I said, sure. So I ended up getting tickets to Jimmy Kimmel Live, and I'm going there in a few weeks, and I'm bringing the last diet book ever with me. So you'll probably see him have it on his show.
Yay.
Yeah. I think you'll love it. He'll probably want to buy copies for everybody he knows.
I'm sure. Okay. Let's just do chapter 13 and then we'll complete this, but.
Perfect. Chapter 13, at Christmas time, be sure to ask Santa to bring you a big fat bank account and a slim body, and don't get the two mixed up. Isn't that cute?
Yes.
So sure. You know, and really, what does that speak to? Is, as you know, the power of being very clear on what it is you want. Just as I just did, you know, Jimmy Kimmel seeing, okay, so like when we talk about me going on Jimmy Kimmel, I created a vision in my mind using the power of imagination. I created a vision in my mind of me being on Jimmy Kimmel or not. I don't even have to be on the show. I don't care if I'm on the show. My book is what I'm seeing on the show. Jimmy Kimmel holding the book up and, you know, I bought one for everybody in the audience. And, and that's really what it starts with, is clarity on what our vision really is power. I get real clear on what it is that you want. See it, even with your physical body. You know, one of the things that I have on my vision board is a picture of me in a bikini on a beach down south, and or pictures of me on stage in a really slim outfit. So I keep the vision of me being slim and staying slim. I remember one time I got one of the Victoria's Secrets catalogs, and I cut out one of the bodies. And I put my head on it, and that was on my vision board. I don't have that one up there anymore at 57 years of age. I don't think I'm going to be in Victoria's Secret's catalog. That's a little bit much, but, you know, it's part of creating the vision and being very clear on what it is that you do want.
Right. Well, Peggy, as always, this has been a great pleasure of mine. You know, I hope people read it with a light heart, because it really is, you know, the message is clear. Let's try to stop making this so difficult. There are simple ways of doing this. Just, you know, be more conscious. I mean, I think, you know, often we substitute addictions. You know, we're watching TV and start pulling up things that, you know, well, we're not even aware of, right? We're just doing it because it's just something we do. Or when we go to a movie, we always have to have popcorn and a drink. I mean, it's these, you know, things that we're just not aware of. And when you're motivated and when you're ready, you'll make the change.
Absolutely true. And I think, as I said earlier, it's the good news and the bad news. The good news is we're addictive, you know, beings. And the bad news is we're addictive beings. So like you just said, you create a new habit, and that's really what it is. Instead of doing, you know, watching the TV and sitting on your bum, you know, eating bonbons, you know, create a new habit. You could maybe still watch TV, but eat some celery sticks or whatever, right?
And stay away from the news.
Yeah.
Stay away from the things that are going to make you emotionally eat.
So true.
Okay.
So true. Well, this was a lot of fun. I really appreciate you. Appreciate everything you're doing, and appreciate you help sharing the message as well with everyone.
Thank you. Well, you have been listening to News for the Heart. We've been getting to the heart of what matters, and you are listening with Peggy McCall. Peggy, how can people get a hold of you?
Go to peggymccall.com, PeggyMccoll.com.
All right. You heard it here. We'll be back next week. Thank you.
Have a question for Lori and want to be on the next News from the Heart show? Drop us a line via instantfeedback@bmajor.org. News from the Heart is brought to you by Intuitive Soul and is produced by Major Radio for Clear Channel's iHeartRadio and bmajor.org.